Canadian Family Health Counseling provides education and counseling services across Canada and beyond. Our holistic approach, called neural network therapy, uses practical tools to boost mood, reduce anxiety, manage anger, break unwanted habits, and develop strong, healthy relationships. Sit back and relax while clinical director and founder Kim Sargent shares her insights and expertise on why emotional health matters.
Hello, and welcome back to Emotional Health Matters. My name is Kim Sargent, and I'm the clinical director of Canadian Family Health Counseling. I'm here today with Blaise Schwaller from Connecticut. And so she's got this really great program, a couple of things we're going to talk about today. One of them is the Talisman Transformation Method, but it sounds as though she's up to some really exciting other things. So in just a minute here, we'll come back to that. The other thing I want to say is that I met Blaise through one of our podcast connecting sort of groups, and in that learned a little bit about who she is and what she brings to the table. And so it just seemed like a really great fit for Emotional Health Matters. And so with that, hello, Blaise, how are you?
Hi, Kim. I'm doing great. Thank you so much for having me here. It's wonderful to finally connect.
Yeah, it took a little bit, but we did it. So
yes,
that's what happens when you're a couple of people in the field and going, yeah, here, there, and everywhere. And I just have to say, this is, you know, kind of a funny thing to start with, but you just have such a great voice for doing podcasts.
Thank you.
I was listening to you the other day, and I just went, you must have just sort of, you know, there was a certain point maybe in your youth, and you went, I guess I'm a podcaster because of because that's what I need to do with my life, because I've got this voice for it. So it's great. It's really, I find it very soothing. And I would love for you to jump in with, you know, it's new to me that you've got this new venture going on. So why don't you talk to me a bit about this burnout piece? I really would love to hear about this. And I think this is something, of course, that would be very timely given the state of affairs in our world today. So do you want to jump in with that?
Absolutely. Yeah. So the program that I'm currently launching is called The Burnout Cure. And I'm helping women in particular deal with their burnout because it's a different flavor than what I see in men. And obviously, as a woman who has been through burnout, I know what I'm talking about there. Yeah. So the women that I'm working with right now, they're across a range of things. So I have entrepreneurs, I have people who are stay-at-home moms. And the uniting piece really is that we're caretakers, we're taking care of the people in our lives. And there's just this constant stream of demands. It's the small, tiny things that just build up and build up and build up that are the background noise that forms like the foundation of our burnout. It's not just work. It's not just one incident. It's that everywhere we look, there's a demand coming. There's a child who needs something. There's a partner who needs something. There's work that's asking you for something more. And at the same time, there's society saying, be pretty while you do it. Don't have emotions about that because we just want a smile on your face. And why can't you do it better and faster? And I don't want to hear about your problem because I've had a hard time too.
Wow.
And it's like so damaging, right?
For sure. Well, and something that was kind of new to me, I think I didn't even think about it personally, but certainly it was in my career, I could see it more clearly in others. And that was just the idea, and there's a name for it. You might be familiar with it, but just the idea of not, it's not just what you have to do or what's on your plate for the day, but also just the idea that I think, you know, our brains seem to be wired, of course, to be able to pay attention to many things at once. And so we've got that great superhighway going on of information kind of flying around our brain. And, but I think the idea of just knowing I may not be physically responsible for a particular task, but I still mentally have it on my list of things to do, and it takes up space. And so things like, well, I know that, you know, I need to have my child over to this soccer game, and my partner was going to stop and pick up some things from the grocery store, but what are those things and what's necessary and what's missing in the cupboards and what needs to be replaced? All of those things take up this vast amount of space that I don't think we really necessarily considered to be much in terms of a workload, and yet it is. So
it totally is. And I think part of the emotion that women are feeling around this is that there's this anger and frustration because it's like you're not allowed to acknowledge that or that it doesn't count. When they bring it up to their partners or just in general, they're like, oh, I can't really bring that up though, because aren't we all doing that? And the answer is, yeah, women are doing that, but not everyone's doing that.
Right.
Yeah. So it's helping Well, what I'm trying to do is help people get in touch with their feelings and to understand that they're allowed to have feelings about it. You're allowed to be upset. You're allowed to be uncomfortable. You're allowed to have a full range of feelings, and that it's normal. It's okay. And you're not crazy. And we kind of take the appropriateness out of the situation, or that's what I do in the sessions, right? Like, you are allowed to be as angry, as upset, as sad, as devastated as you are about having that giant list and all of the things happening in your life and all of the times that you never got to sit down and cry about it. You're allowed to have that. And there's no judgment. I'm not going to judge you. And how can I help you not judge yourself for feeling less? Because there's this tendency that women have to feel less because they got upset. Like, that's not allowed. You have to do all of it and not be upset about it. And I want to take away that stigma and help people really become whole human beings and really change the world through changing how they relate to themselves and then how they teach other people to relate back to us. How do we raise our children so that, you know, the next generation of women doesn't automatically assume, yeah, you know what, I'll just do the dishes because it's faster if I do it than if my brother does it. Mm-mm. Right. I want to see the world change. Yeah.
Well, that's great. I'm glad you have small goals, right? So that's
yeah, it's doable.
That's fantastic. No, that's great. And I think you're right. I mean, I remember thinking in parenthood many times over, this is really hard. This is so hard. There's so much of it that's really tedious, and it's frustrating, and it's overwhelming, and it's all these things. And my mother very graciously saying to me, well, that means you're doing it right, right? Because you are taking the time. And it is a matter of kind of, you know, those natural tendencies to say, I'll just, even as a parent, okay, never mind, I'll just clean up these things rather than calling a child back to task or to doing different things. It's faster, it's easier, it's quicker. You know, we see how we get there, right? It's not,
oh yeah,
it's just a machine that's moving so quickly that I think that speed of light is what can, you know, make us really unfortunately stay very stuck in patterns that aren't necessarily really very helpful patterns. You've definitely identified one of them for sure.
Yes.
And I know, I mean, it's great. You know, I do, I spend a bit of time for sure looking at the connections and the differences, particularly I'm interested in the neuroscience and the differences in gender. And so now recognizing that gender is non-binary, which is the other, you know, piece to bring into all of this. But I still think that there, you know, we definitely see these, you know, for instance, we know that the developing brain of a female will, by the age of about 25, those patterns become much more established and sort of set in motion. So whatever habits you have in place in and around 22 to 25, that's about what's going to become easy for you lifelong. It's, you know, yes, the rest of it is something to break. Whereas males have this, that goes on till 30. So that's a great difference in that 5-year, you know, block of time. And so I think that some of what you're talking about, though, is that giving permission to at least express what's happening or begin by expressing what's happening. I don't think anybody wants to be in I don't think male or female people want to be in a position where there's a lot of resentment and frustration and overwhelm. I think people just don't know what to do. So
correct. Isn't that the battle? What do you even do about it? And how do you have everyone get on board? And I think some of it is, how uncomfortable are you willing to get? Because it's going to be uncomfortable. And I think that's the hugest hurdle into getting past all of this, is helping people deal with discomfort long enough to see something change.
Right.
Because it's so easy to back off. And it is for me too. Like, I'm not immune. There are moments where I just throw up my hands and like, oh my God, tonight it actually is easier for me to do the dishes and not, you know, train someone else how to do it better. But I also realize that if I choose this every time, if I let that discomfort, you know, pass so fast that I won't even touch it, nothing will change. This will be my life until I'm 90.
Yes.
And what do I actually want? And that's the question I want to ask other people, is what do you actually want to have happen?
Yeah. Yes. Well, it's sourcing those needs. I mean, it's not something I think that comes easily when you're relegated to the end of the line. And I know, you know, I talked pretty openly about a brain injury that kind of made health and wellness the forefront of my life. But I think it took that, actually. You know, I had somebody drive into me to be able to realize, oh no, you don't get to go to the end when there's crumbs left behind. If you're lucky, you're going to have to actually be at the front of this story and a big part of it. And that made everybody really uncomfortable. I think people had a tremendous amount of compassion and understanding because they could see very clearly the pain I was in and the things I was suffering with, and they were all quite amazing with it. But over a length of time, it was sort of like, okay, when does she go back to being that other person?
Isn't that interesting? Do you feel like that happened, that there was like a leeway given because it was an extraordinary circumstance, but that if you're an ordinary person again, you're not allowed to have these complaints?
Definitely. I think that there's
Let's talk about it. Yeah. I'm so excited.
Juicy stuff.
Yeah.
And isn't that, I mean, I think that that really speaks to what you're saying. We kind of get really comfortable and we hold people in these extended holding patterns. So, I think we're as responsible for breaking, we can see why it's hard to break out of them, because we're not the only one trying to break a pattern. We're trying to change the neural pathways in our own brain while we have other people very committed to those behaviors. Yeah, for sure.
Oh, shoot. Yeah, that it's absolutely true. And it feels so complicated because you're not just up against yourself, which is hard enough, but you're up against everyone that ever interacts with you to a varying degree, and especially the ones that you love the most and that are closest to you. And that makes it so challenging for us because we're like, oh, well, I love them. I don't need to change them, but I need to change them. How do I do it? And is that okay? Is it nice? Oh my gosh, the niceness factor, right? Like, are we allowed to not be nice? And what does that mean? And are we allowed to have enjoyment? How much enjoyment is okay? Like, these are weird questions that we don't ask ourselves a lot, or at least I didn't used to. And when I bring it up, people just like, they have this blankness, like, oh, I don't know.
Yeah.
How much enjoyment do I get to have? Like, we don't even know. And that's how little we've been asked how much we get to enjoy our life. Yeah. I want everyone to enjoy their life a lot.
Well, that, somebody was talking about longevity and some of the, I'm actually working in my little neck of the woods here. I live in a little wee village within a city, and this village is actually its own island. And so there's some really great things about it. It's a very desirable area to live. And even actually on a global scale, I was doing the math one day about kind of Canada and ranking number one for the quality of life. And then looking at Peterborough, the larger city, being the number one city in Canada to move to or to retire to, and then East City being the most desirable area of Peterborough to live. And I went, hey, wait a minute, I'm in the number one. So I was kind of going, this is amazing. And so I really set out about this thing called Project H, which became my latest project. And it really is about maximizing health and wellness and looking to try to make this village of East City the healthiest, happiest, most harmonious place on earth by 2030. So I also have lofty goals.
we need to have them lofty, otherwise nothing happens.
That's right, for sure. Well, and in that, what was coming out of that, I'd really like to actually be designated as a blue zone, and I'm looking, of course, at lots of things around health and wellness and particularly longevity. But I finally just said, I'm just not interested in living to be 100 years old unless I'm having a marvelous time. So
yes. And I think you're not alone. Like, it's tiring to think like, God, I'd have to live to 100 and everyone's going to make it hard the whole freaking time. No one wants that.
No. And like I said, I don't think that, when we're doing couples work in the counseling practice, I'm trying to say, we've got, people that are tiptoeing around and saying, oh gosh, and I don't know. And they seem really upset and angry and I don't know what to do. And so I'm just trying to put it out there. Nobody's having a good time here. What is it all about? And is this the question, why are we not asking ourselves that question a little bit more? Because I think we're just, of course, in that we get up and we push through the day and we get used to things being, we acclimate very quickly. We can adapt to so much that I think we've seen that particularly, of course, with what's happening with this pandemic, but we continue to adapt. And I think it's sort of a bit like adapting to a big sliver in your foot, right?
So yes,
we just don't even realize that, if I just stopped and took a minute and actually looked to try and get this thing out of my foot, I would feel so much better. And yes. I would radiate, a whole lot better energy, and I would get to where I'm going in a much, more enjoyable way. I think there's this sense of, I don't even quite know that it's there. I'm just used to living with this uncomfortable thing. And so I can see how that would really fit with what you're talking about of, women just in that, place of, I'm just doing all the things I have to do because I don't know why, I just have to do them. That's what life is.
Yeah. Well, it's so weird because I think it starts when we're so young. And I think having a young daughter, my daughter is like 4 and a half right now. I'm witnessing so many things as you do, right? As a parent, you look back, you're like, oh shoot, I remember kind of being that age and some of the things that were said and how I took that. Do I want her to take it that way? Am I being negligent? And what about her feelings? How big is she allowed to be? How big is she allowed to play and act in the world? And how am I teaching her to interact with other people and with myself? Like, how big is her range going to be allowed to be? Because right. I think when I was young, I got the message. I'm not going to say explicitly, like, it was just in the world. Be smaller. Don't be so loud. Don't be in the way. You know, like, and that was really internalized. And I started to get small to the point that I would draw very tiny and my words got very small. And, you know, the critique on my card was always, oh, she's very smart, but we need a magnifying glass to read even what she writes. Cause wow. I took it that far. And I'm like, wow, you know, like, so I've worked really hard in my life to open it back up and be like, wow, what could I be if I was allowed to be exuberant? If I could just do my happy dance and not care that people might think that's weird or judge me. And I want to see that kind of joy be able to play through in children's lives. And I'm wondering, like, what would the world be like if little girls get to grow up and be taking up as much space as the little boys and right. that they don't have to worry about, oh, the prettiness conversation. Oh, the prettiness. That one's starting to come up and I'm like, oh geez, this, we're getting into a can of worms here, child.
Wow. Well, that's really yeah. interesting. I'm kind of at the end of the journey with my daughter, who's just actually tomorrow turning 24. But, oh. But all of the, yeah, I mean, and I, you know, I really felt that I was a forerunner at the time that I was raising her, but I listen to what you're saying and I'm going, no, I don't, there's so much more to go. Yeah, it's really, you know, it's a great conversation that you're having and a message that you're putting out there. So tell me, what does it look like when somebody comes to work with you and what's, you know, do you do this one-on-one? Do you have groups? Is there homework involved? What's the process yeah. look like?
Yeah. So the process is a group process. We do about a month together and we do two calls a week. And what we're doing is diving into the thought process and the feeling process. So there's exercises that we do in call in the lives and you'd be able to look back at them in the recordings. And we also have a private group where we're doing the quote unquote homework, the fun work, the community work of supporting each other and learning how to embody the changes and the mind shift sets. Mind shift sets, mindset shifts. My goodness.
one of those.
You know, one of those yeah. things. Yeah. yeah, because I think what lacks in the world is this chance to practice where it's lower stakes. We're all afraid to mess it up in our real life. So we want to have this opportunity to be able to play out and go like, hey, I want to try this, or I tried this at home and it didn't go really well. Where did it go wrong? And have a comfortable place where you can talk about that and get some feedback and not be like, okay, now I have to go out and just like shout it from the rooftops. And you need that space of support when it gets hard, because, you know, I'm helping people get comfortable being uncomfortable. So it's uncomfortable. And you need to be able to have a place to offload and be like, okay, that was really hard and I'm not feeling great. And this is what's going on in my body. I'm really interested in how people experience their emotions and experience these thought shifts in their body, because it's crunchy in there. Like stuff gets lodged in. And as you start to open it up, now there's space. And like you said, with that splinter in your foot, right? You remove it and you're like, whoa, I've been walking sideways my whole life and I didn't even know, but now this hurts. And that's yeah. what happens. So it's building in that support. So you're like, okay, now I've noticed that there's this other thing over here that didn't even seem important last week, but now it's like really obvious. And that's awesome because it's progress. So yeah, it's people coming in. We're forming a community. We're holding each other up and we're asking the questions. It's really asking you the questions that help you consider your life differently. Like, what do you think you do if you're a mom? How are you thinking about yourself? And what do you feel? What do you think you're capable of? And some exercises I'll do with them will ask, what do you believe about people who have the thing that you want? And okay. some of the ideas that we have are just, when you get to hear them from yourself and see them written out, you're like, oh my God, I had no idea I thought that. But once you notice it, it changes everything. So yeah, it's really fun.
Wow, that's great. I love that you're doing it in a group setting, because I think that there's so much that can happen there where, you know, when you're exploring, especially things like core beliefs, and it's sometimes just a lot easier to see something in somebody else and go, that's what I mean. Yeah, that's it. And you can connect with something and kind of call it your own, but it's come out of somebody else's mouth. It just happened to be that, you know, as you're witnessing that, it just went ding, ding, ding all the way through and made a lot of sense. And the strength in numbers, there's no question that's a great one too.
And you know what else I think about group settings is that you're going to make friends there, or at least meet people who are seeing you as the person you're becoming, and they hold you to that in a way that when you're trying to change your life, everyone who's around you knows you from, you know, maybe back to when you were born, and they have their own preconceived notion about how you're expected to act, right? And how you're expected to show up. So you're trying to change that.
Yeah. Those holding patterns, those are neural pathways in somebody else's being that are about you. So
exactly. And you're like, okay, you don't have control over that. But if you can build this community of people who are over where you want to be, that's huge. That's everything. That's you being able to go, okay, I do have someone who knows what I'm talking about, someone who's been on the path that I've been on or who is on it right now, and they can help hold me up. And they know, like, they're not going to hold me to this old thing. Or if they see it, they'll be like, haha, yeah, I've been through that too. And I'm here now. And it's okay. You've got this. I think there's so much power there in being shown who we can be through seeing how other people are evolving too.
Right. That makes perfect sense. So I have to ask though, so you have to share a little bit about, how did you go from tattoo artist to where did this come about? It's such an interesting story. So
Okay. So I tattooed for about a little over a decade. I had my own tattoo studio and art gallery, and I was super into transforming people's lives through the power of tattoos and just art and embodiment. And it's funny because it seems incredibly connected to me now, even if it might not at first glance. So tattooing is taking someone's life, taking their story, hearing them, and for me, like really trying to dive into their soul and be like, what is it that needs to be seen? What is it that needs to be heard here? And how can we make it manifest on their skin? And people would come in and they'd have an idea about what they wanted. And for me, it was the conversation part that was the most exciting thing. It wasn't even necessarily the tattoo itself. It was the getting to the meat of it. Why do you need it? What does it mean to you? What are you saying? How is it changing who you are? And I'd, you know, we'd figure it out and we'd have that conversation. We'd do the tattoo. And when someone's in the tattoo chair, it's a coaching relationship. And I had no idea because I didn't even know life coaches existed when I started tattooing. But then someone told me about it. I was like, oh yeah, I do that every day. People come in and they have ideas and you're just coaching them through it about how they're like, of course, yeah, you're going to get there. Have you tried this? What's going on? Have you thought about this? Something really neat that I noticed about tattooing is that it's this physical manifestation in your life about an energy that you're wanting to become. And I have over 200 hours of tattoos on my own body. So I've been through it a lot and I've used it consciously once I started to realize this is how it works, is you have this idea, you have an energy that you want to be, you explore deeply, you have someone come and like, you're willing to go through pain and blood and sweat and like sugar crashes, whatever it is to get that tattoo on your body. And then you have to nurture it and heal it. And you're interacting with your body and your space. And now it's the most important thing in your life. This is so cool. So you get a tattoo and you want to show it off. This is the best tattoo I've ever got. This one, it's so meaningful. You show it with everybody. And then like 6 months later, you've forgotten that you even have it because it's a part of who you are now. And that blew my mind because I'm like, oh, it's so true. Someone will be staring at your tattoo across the way and you're like, who is that crazy person and why are they looking at me? And then they're like, oh, I love your tattoo. And you've forgotten that it was even there, even though it was the most important thing ever that you spent $1,000 on 6 months ago.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I said, oh, that's the transformation. Like, I think human nature needs to have a physical expression of the change, that we don't just want to change how we think or how we feel. We want to just have a little nudge, something in the environment that plays back and forth with it. We want to show it off. We want it to be acknowledged. We really love ritual. I think that's so important for transforming the way that we feel or think or moving into a new phase of existence, is to have that rite of passage. And tattoos really provide that. And I think it's something that I've brought into my coaching practice as well, is to recognize that our brains like ritual, like we really respond well to it. We like community. We want acknowledgement. And if we use all of those things, it actually helps that transition happen much faster. And yeah, and then it's actually more fun. I think it's just natural that we like to pick things up and gather them and put them in our environment. And if we're conscious about it, you can choose what that energy is going to be. You can choose the thought that you're going to have. And it adds so much power to whatever work you're doing in a coaching session. So
It does. Well, and so tell me then, I mean, that leads naturally, we might as well talk about the Talisman Transformation Method, because that's something that you've created or had created. Is this, was this shortly following your career as a tattoo artist, or how did this go?
It was a few years later. So actually, it's so interesting. We're coming back full circle. So I had a crisis of burnout at the end of my tattoo career, where I had expanded my studio to be more people, bigger, big gallery, bringing in stuff. And I was also lead tattoo artist at the time. So I was tattooing beyond my physical capacity. But as women do, as I do, I don't know, I would tell myself like, oh, my pain is, it's just my pain. It's fine. It's not that big of a deal. Everybody else is tattooing just as much or close as much as me, and they're not in pain. So I must be making it up. And then one day, I, you know, took a day off, went to the gym, and found that every time I'd lift my arms up, I would go numb from my fingertips all the way up to my shoulders. Oh. And then I went into the hot tub and I was like, ooh, it's way hot. I'm going to pass out. I got into the shower and then like the cold water was hitting me and I just lost sensation in my hands and it kept going up, like both of them at the same time up towards my chest. I'm like, oh my God, am I having a heart attack? Am I dying? I don't know. I need help. I push the door open and I just, you know, fall out naked into a locker room and
oh my
collapse
God.
And my hands like turn into little claws. And it's like watching myself from a movie. It's like the worst nightmare. I'm like, oh, I'm an artist. I use my hands. This is what I do. And I watch my hands turn into claws and down I go. And, you know, in the aftermath, and I go to the hospital and everything, they're like, did you know that you've torn your tendons in your hands? Like you're close to just like severing them completely in two of your fingers. You need to stop. I'm like, well, for how long? And I'm thinking like for 2 weeks. They're like, for 9 months. I'm like, what?
That's my life. Oh,
that's
my
life. So that was the end. Yeah. So that came crashing and burning. I'm dealing with the burnout of who am I now? If I'm not providing, if I'm not making stuff, if I'm not part of this community, if I'm no longer a boss, a tattoo artist, an artist, like all of these things, I'm not earning money. Am I even worthy to be in this marriage? Like so many crazy thoughts, right? What do I do with myself now? So in working my way from just rock bottom, laying on the ground every day going, I can't even pick up a glass of water without feeling like it's hurting me, to figuring out how to eat well and, you know, restore my health and restore my sanity and feel happy again, I had to learn how to feel all those things. And part of that healing process was recognizing the value of the work that I was doing, not just as I am producing something for someone else. It was me really going in and thinking, well, what was the essence of it? Because you might not be able to pick up a tattoo machine or even draw again. So could you still provide this transformation for yourself or someone else if you couldn't draw on them? And that was my question. And I sat with that for a while. And what came out of it was, yes, actually, the most important thing wasn't actually the tattoo. It was the transformation that was happening around the discussion and how were we going to make it into a physical object. And then I said, well, I don't have to be the one to make the physical object. Maybe you can find it. Maybe you can have a conversation with something you already have. Maybe I need to have a conversation with some of the things I already have and see how I'm going to, you know, get my entire environment on board with me for where I want to go now. So it, everything that I teach or coach on is all born from my own experiences. And I do a lot of reading and I'm really interested in the neuroscience too. And like, how do our brains work and how do our emotions work? And how can we really look at it as a whole and be a whole person? Because at the time that I went down, I didn't feel like a whole person. I felt like, I don't know, like nothing. And I know that I'm not alone. I think all of us, when we go through a crisis like that, if we've defined ourselves by what we produce in the world, yeah, it feels like you're nothing if you can't do that anymore, but that's not the truth of who we are. And that's what Talisman Transformation Method was born from, is recognizing that, you know, we're all human, we're worthy, just being here is okay. And the things that we all want to do is interact with our environment. We want to get feedback from that environment. We want to have a community. And if you can't find that community, you can actually start creating it around you, even with the objects around you. And it's about having conscious conversation, you know, with your plants, with a rock, with your house, whatever it is to start with. And, you know, it's like playing a game of make-believe, but then, I don't know, it becomes more real. And as you know, like anything that you're really interacting with and you believe in, it is real for you. It's real in your brain. It makes a difference.
That's right. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know if that answered the question. I went on a tangent, but that's okay.
No, it's great. That's what I love about podcasting. Podcasting is tangenting.
Isn't it great? It's wonderful. Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's brilliant. No, that's really interesting. I love the links between all of these things, and I can certainly see how that, you know, kind of one led to another, the next. So that makes so much sense. I would really love then, yeah, to leave people with a couple of things. I mean, if you had one piece of something, what's juicy that you think, obviously, burnout is the hot topic for you right now. So probably in that field, but what's one thing that you think, wow, if I could just go back 20 years and I would just give myself this one little piece of something, what would it be that would start somebody on that path or begin to light up a bit of circuitry that says there's more to this than what you see right now?
Yeah, I would say to younger Blaze, when fighting used to be hard for me, the emotion of anger, to even acknowledge that I had it. So I think I would say to myself, like, when you hit that blank space, when someone says, like, it seems like you're angry and you're like, no, I'm not. Really think about that. Like, go in there, Blaze. It's okay. There's something in there for you, because that was such a key to everything for me, is recognizing that you're allowed to have a full range of emotions, and anything that you're not allowing yourself to access or you think that you don't have, it's not that you don't have it. It's just, it's blocked, and it's okay to do that work. And it's okay if it takes time. It's worth it. It's worth it. Like, the denial, it's not actually helping you at all. That's what I would say to myself. Denial isn't helping you, but finding a way to access that is important, and that's your life's work. And that's really what I've made it into, is my life's work. Your work is to figure out how you can have more access to all these emotions. How can they all be okay? And how can you help everyone have that same freedom that you want to have? Yeah.
Excellent. Ooh, that's just, yeah, fantastic right there. So the next, I guess the last piece would be just, how do people find you? How do they connect with you? Talk about Full Spectrum Feeling and your podcast, and
sure.
What are their locations they can, yeah, how can they connect with you?
You can connect with me, my friends. Yeah. So Full Spectrum Feeling is the name of my podcast. It's pretty much out there in the world, wherever you want to stream your podcast, or you can go to, I think it's Buzzsprout, Full Spectrum Feeling. And that's all of them listed right there. If you're interested in learning more about me and working with me, you can head to coachwithblaze.com, because I know that my last name, Schwaller, is hard for people to spell. So Coach with Blaze, a blaze like a fire. And, you can also do blazeschwaller.com. And right now I'm doing a revamp of everything, but you definitely can find me through all of those avenues. And actually, there's another thing too. If you're on Facebook and you feel like you really resonate with what we were talking about and you want to get on board to join this revolution of ridding women of burnout and giving yourself permission to be all that you can be, I have a free group that's a community called Permission Granted. And you can just look for that on Facebook and I'll let you in, and you can see some fun free trainings and stuff that I do, because I really want everyone to have access to all these ideas and liberate ourselves from the madness. Yeah.
Wow. I need you to come in and do a Facebook Live in Emotional Health Matters, because I think you've got so many things to offer, and it would be great. Oh. Yeah. If you wouldn't mind popping over to that Facebook group and just, I think you're in the group already, Arch.
I am. Sure. Yes.
Yeah. Excellent. Okay. So then that has to happen, because Permission Granted sounds like a place that also people are going to,
yes.
They need to get over there, and they need that big rubber stamp. And so that's great. If you've got one, that's perfect.
Oh my gosh. I need to get the Permission Granted stamp. I was like, you know what we need? We just need permission to feel like shit, permission to feel happy, like all of it. Definitely. We want the whole range. So Permission Granted, you have it. Come on in. We can talk about your feelings. It's all welcome there. Yeah.
Oh, I love it. Well, definitely. Well, that'll be step two for us. But thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me. I know it took a bit to get coordinated, but it was so worth it. I've loved listening to bits and pieces of the things you do, and realize that you've just got so many great things that you're piecing together. And I just love the idea of being able to supporting in community. Just keeps speaking to me over and over again. And it's just getting louder and louder. And I just really feel as though one of the great gifts of what's happened, on a global scale, is really about that. I think it's kind of nestled us back into the need and just the Yeah, just knowing we are meant to be in community. Yes. We are meant to connect, and that
absolutely
is, that's where the oxygen comes from. So, yeah, that's great. And I really, it's been fun talking with you, and I'm hoping we can do it again soon.
I would love to. Thanks so much, Kim. It's a pleasure.
All right, take care.
You too. Thanks.
If you like what you've heard on today's podcast and want to learn more about our counseling and education services, or to get involved with our Grow Happy Gardens Health and Happiness Worldwide Tour, visit our website at canadianfamilyhealth.ca. Because health and happiness begin with you.